Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope. Welcome back to Anthologies of Hope for episode number 8 and our first episode of 2019. I'm your host, Rick Osowski, and as always, I'm not a mental health professional, but simply a mental health advocate with a passion for storytelling. This week, we have our first male guest on Anthologies of Hope, and a conversation that I was very excited to have. Kenneth joins us from the original Heart Camp group almost a year ago now in Melbourne, Florida. Male voices in the mental health discussion are very important, not as a leader or clinician per se, but as a participant, an advocate, and as someone on their own mental health journey, wherever that may be. Additionally, the concept of masculinity and toxic masculinity has an overlap here. For years, it's been custom for boys not to cry, suck it up, tough it out. However, one of the bright spots is that concept is becoming less of an accepted reality, and the notion of simply talking through your emotions, your feelings, the highs and the lows, is becoming more of a reality, regardless of gender. And that's another catalyst for this podcast as a whole. Breaking down toxic masculinity with frank, everyday conversation is so very important in mental health, based on some of these statistics from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. These can be found at afsp.org. On average, there are 129 suicide completions per day. The rate of suicide is highest in middle-aged white men in particular. In 2017, men died by suicide 3.5 times more often than women, and white males accounted for 7 of 10 suicides in 2016. These numbers have to come down, and they will only start to come down once we begin to break down the idea and concepts surrounding and supporting toxic masculinity. Now, as I mentioned, we're still in season one and still connecting with some of the extended Heart Camp family across the 5 sessions that were run in 2018 between Florida, Los Angeles, and Nashville. If you're not familiar with Heart Camp, we dive deep into the ins and outs of it in the intros of our first 2 episodes. Additionally, the first couple of seasons of our podcast will remain conversations with members of the Heart Camp family before we bring folks in from the general mental health community. As a quick refresher, Heart Camp is the brainchild of Jamie Torkowski and a 2-day workshop focusing on authenticity, writing, bringing your heart to work, and mental health. For more info on Heart Camp, including upcoming dates like February 2019, again in Melbourne, Florida, you can check out heartcampwithjamie.com for details. Kenneth's story is a great one, with lots of insight into the latter half of his own personal journey. A previous intern for To Write Love on Our Arms, Kenneth discusses the process and experience of being one of the coveted interns for the organization, as well as the many personal benefits and areas of growth that interns often take away from the program. We also learned that Kenneth is a camp guy, currently working and residing in a YMCA camp in the Santa Cruz Mountains of California. As you'll hear, if you put camp in the title of just about anything, he's up for it. He's also an amazing photographer, and we jump into some of his inspiration around his work and what keeps him going. He has a great metaphor when it comes to the differences between chasing sunrises and sunsets, so be sure to listen for that one. As he mentions, we really only touch on the latter half of his journey in this session, so we're looking forward to having him return in a future episode to dive in the first half as well. Additionally, Kenneth contributes a bit of the hard rock edge to our seasonal playlist that I've been looking for also. As you know, we're putting together a playlist available at anthologiesofhope.com/playlist that hosts and guests of each episode can contribute meaningful songs to. I was inspired by Kenneth's entry this week, Song for the Broken by Close Your Eyes, for choosing my pick as well. As Kenneth mentioned, the music may be a little heavier than some of the other songs on our playlist, but the lyrics are really where it's at. So that's why I chose Disturb's The Light for my entry this week. A part of the chorus in this song echoes, "Within your darkest memories lies the answer if you dare to find it. Don't let hope become a memory." And that's exactly what this podcast is meaning to do. Never let hope become a memory. So be sure to check out both of these songs over on the Spotify playlist as soon as you finish listening to this episode. Each week, we'd like to remind you that if you're in a time of crisis, we'll be covering a range of potentially difficult topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and come back to listen once you're in a more positive season. If you are in need of help, an abundance of international resources can be found on the Find Help pages from To Write Love in Our Arms and Hope for the Day. To Write Love in Our Arms can be found at twloha.com/find-help, and Hope for the Day can be found at hftd.org/find-help. As always, you can find us at anthologiesofhope.com, Facebook and Instagram as Anthologies of Hope, on Twitter as Anthologies Pod, or email us directly at anthologiesofhope, all one word, no punctuation, at gmail.com. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, Google Podcasts, and if there's anywhere else you're listening to podcasts that you're currently not finding us, please let us know. So without further ado, the first episode of 2019 for Anthologies of Hope, Kenneth Westfall.
Hey guys, my name is Kenneth Westfall. I call the Santa Cruz Mountains of California home. I'm a photographer by trade, and I met Rick through the wonderful community that is Heart Camp, and I think we're going to tell you guys a little bit about that and kind of what led me to Heart Camp and to write love and all kinds of other wonderful things.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to our session here for a number of reasons, both being the Detroit Love connection that you have, being a former intern as well, and kind of shedding some light on that, where I recently recorded with Katie Mumper, who is currently the social media coordinator. It may not be the exact title, social media coordinator, director for Detroit Love.
Right.
And then also just the fact that seemingly in or throughout Heart Camp, as well as the mental health kind of conversation, it tends to have or be underrepresented by male voices. So having another male voice in this series, whereas this is number 10 that we're recording, and it's the first episode with another guy that I'm doing. So it's interesting to have those different types of conversations and a different perspective on a lot of the same issues that we're all dealing with, especially seeing that through a different lens. So I'm interested for this one. So happy to make this happen.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So yeah, just kind of jumping in, where you had some initial connection with Detroit Love or with Jamie through the Detroit Love internship process. So you obviously knew of them prior to last year, prior to when you interned and stuff like that. So how'd you initially get turned on to Detroit Love, and how did that help you? And then, I mean, we have a unique perspective here of being able to jump into your internship. So wherever you want to go around there would be great to kick it off.
Yeah, definitely. So I think I first heard of To Write Love during the MySpace days, specifically probably a Warped tour when I was still in high school. And just said, you know, hey, that's a cool banner. I should go talk to those guys and see what they're about. And I got an info card, and I remember seeing the MySpace, but I never like clicked on anything or looked into it. And so, oh, cool, like all these bands are supporting it and all this stuff. And just kind of, yeah, it was just kind of over there on a shelf for a while. And then I really actually found meaning and a lot of connection with To Write Love when I was not in crisis and kind of well along in my journey of recovery. It helped me really to find my voice and really to be okay with talking about where I was, where I was coming from, and where I was hoping to go. And just being comfortable with saying things like, hey, you know, I have a therapist, or, you know, I'm working on this medication, or, you know, I have somebody that's diagnosed with a mental illness. It really helped me to understand that those are all okay things to say, and that I shouldn't feel any shame in saying those things. And so it really helped me to find my voice, and I really felt a lot of resonance with a lot of just a lot of the language and just the theme and just, you know, the positivity and again, that connection and just that okayness that, you know, they're always talking about. And it became just kind of a cool thing to lean on, you know, and I needed, you know, a blog to read or started, you know, buying shirts here and there. And when it got to the point where I was far enough along in my journey of recovery that I started to see the bigger mental health picture and how important the need for that kind of stuff and those conversations are, it helped. It was a nice vehicle for me to kind of figure out how I can have those conversations now with other people, now that I'm far enough along in my journey and far enough along in recovery, where I want to start, you know, reaching out to other folks and in meeting folks where they're at. Well, how do I do that? How do I encourage them? I'm not a therapist or a counselor, and I'm not going to pretend to be one, but how can I help them bridge the gap between where they're at and the help that they need? How can I help get them there? How can I start these conversations? You know, the language to use, I found myself kind of echoing a lot of, you know, Jamie and Chad's words and just all the blog posts. I found myself not reciting those, but those would come up, you know, when I was having these conversations with people. Yeah.
and being able to have those words, maybe like you said, not reciting them, but when you're having conversations, you hear those words in your head. So then now you have, you know, a plan of action of how you want to engage in the conversation, how to direct the conversation, and, you know, how to then turn the folks that you're talking to on to certain resources and when they might need other resources versus other resources.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was a supporter, a fan. I don't know, you know, what we kind of call ourselves in being, you know, Twiloha
follower,
I guess. Follower. And so fast forward a couple more years and I'm, you know, still kind of, you know, on this path that we're all walking along. It's far along in my journey. I was 22 now. I'm kind of at not a crossroads in my life. That's a Al Pacino quote. not necessarily a crossroads, but I woke up one day and was like, kind of want to try something else, do something. I don't know. I was just kind of in this weird headspace and I was scrolling through Twitter. And so this was shortly after the new year, 2014. I'm scrolling through Twitter and, you know, I followed Trite Love on Twitter and stuff. And I saw this thing posting about internship. And I'd never really been much of a college student. I make the joke that I dropped out twice. I didn't really know, like, I'd heard the word intern, but I was like, what would an internship at, I could be a part of that? Am I somebody that would be qualified? So I just, my ears kind of perked up and I said, you know what, I don't know if I have any business in pursuing this at all, but I think somebody's trying to tell me something here. And so I applied, which is a lot of work, especially because I don't really like the sound of my own voice and you have to make a video as part of your application. And I'm a perfectionist, so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, those don't always go well together.
No, they don't. So I make the application and I do this and I get through the first, you know, kind of first pass and I'm like, okay, cool. I'm on to the second round, I guess. And it just kind of, it's several month long process. And it wasn't till the middle of summer that I'd found out I'd been accepted. And I couldn't believe it. My friends that I was with, I was at camp at the time. They all kind of knew that I was like waiting on this news. And I was checking my phone and my eyes lit up and my buddy Dave went, "Do you get it?" And I said, "Yeah." And I just jumped up and I started, you know, just running around. And that was wild, which meant in 6 weeks' time, I'd be packed up and flying across the country to live in a strange new place for 4 months with people I'd never met. And that's exactly what happened. I got off the plane, showed up this house half a mile from the Atlantic coast in Florida with, you know, six other people I'd never really met before, except for this pretty fantastic group chat we had going on for a while on Facebook.
How did the internship both strengthen, give you tools, or affect your mental health, as well as what were you able to use in there, or, you know, what were some of the activities that you did to contribute to the mental health kind of journey, your journey, or just overall in that space in general?
It was pretty incredible. Just the whole experience as a whole was pretty incredible. There's a lot of things that I didn't expect. You learn a lot about the organization and really kind of the nuts and bolts, and you get to really see how kind of a tight-knit crowd it really is. I was expecting, for some reason, you know, an office building with elevators and and closed doors and long hallways, but no, it's just kind of this, you know, this little office building in a sleepy Florida town that, you know, a bunch of people, some family, some not, but they're all a close-knit community, just kind of making this worldwide movement happen, and it was pretty incredible. I took a number of things away from that. I learned way more about community than I already had. I'd already come out of an environment where I was living and working with the same people, and the Twiloha internship is an extension of that for me. But it was in a different setting. If anything, it was more intense because we spent more time with each other. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of learning and a lot of growth to be taken there. You learn a lot about grace and patience and boundaries and learning how to voice your needs better, because just because you live in a house with six other people who care about you doesn't mean they can read your mind. You still have to learn. I mean, that house was probably one of the best support systems I think I've ever had, but you still have to learn how to look somebody in the eye and say, "I need help. I need to talk to you. I need a minute. I just leave me alone right now." Like, those are all things that helped me to learn, which meant a lot. And definitely I'd say the biggest thing that was wildly surprising for me and I just did not expect at all was this closure that I got in my life, which sounds really weird to say because I've lost a number of people in my life, to suicide. And part of what interns do every day is they answer emails and messages from this thing called the info account, which anybody can message. And we get a lot of different questions in that inbox every day. It's everything from bands wanting to, you know, how can we support you guys? Or, you know, I'm a counselor at a high school. How can I get some of your materials into my curriculum? To heavier things like, you know, I just experienced a loss and I'm still trying to pick up the pieces. Or even people directly themselves in crisis not knowing where else to turn. And I was finding myself having conversations with people that I've, with complete strangers through a screen, that I very much would have rather had or liked to have had with people in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
But that brought me way closer, I think, to that kind of closure is always the word I come back to, but I'm not sure it's the right one. But just that kind of maybe peace, or just kind of a little bit more of a balance. Because when you lose someone like that, it just feels like the scales are tilted in one direction completely. And like you never had a chance to influence that at all. And I think that helped for me, at least, to kind of balance things out a little bit and be like, you know what? I think I did some good, and, you know, I did something. I turned it around.
Mm-hmm. It ends up being something where it's the work itself is very cathartic, and it's more rewarding than just, you know, the effort you're putting into it, where it's exactly. Almost Mr. Miyagi-esque, where you're not necessarily you're wanting to fight, but instead of, you know, going to fight, you're doing the wax on, wax off type stuff. And then eventually it comes around where you have the realization that the work you've been doing on a daily basis was helping you just as much as you were helping everybody else. So having that kind of catharsis through the entire process there, and obviously dealing with a lot of heavy stories as being in the mental health space, as, you know, Jamie has shared, as many other folks have shared, like when you open up, other people open up to you. So being right. In an organization where it's about starting to have the conversation, have the tough conversations, do some of that, it's bound to have, you know, people having those conversations, and you need to react, but then also you need to kind of contribute to them. So being able to have the return, that empathy and understanding and some of that when you've experienced that and kind of coming from a similar place, I'm sure goes a long way. So is there one thing that you like most loved about the internship?
Oh man, I have to say, anyone from the outside would probably say the community. If you want it to, your internship doesn't necessarily end. Your role, the relationship you have with the organization changes after your internship. You're obviously not an employee, but you don't just necessarily go back to being just a regular supporter either.
Yeah.
You feel a bigger part of this thing. And I make every attempt I can to go back when I can. Like I went, you know, during NSPW this year, and I worked for, you know, for 2 weeks in a warehouse helping out, you know, shipping out packages and folding shirts. It's another set of relationships for me to maintain that I find a lot of value in. And I'd probably say, yeah, the community, if anything else. There's a lot of things up there if I thought about it. But yeah, probably the community looking back.
But that's a perfect transition to Heart Camp, because it ends up being something where that community is so tight-knit, because everybody's coming to it with common ground, with similar needs, with a similar search for a level of understanding. And so obviously there's a very obvious common denominator between them, between Jamie and or between Trey Love and Heart Camp being Jamie. But having the mindset going into Heart Camp and what folks have gotten out of it and some of that stuff makes a lot of sense. And there's a lot of, again, obvious overlap there. So, I mean, just being a former Trite Love intern, I'm sure you were following that and kind of keen on Heart Camp being there. But what were some of your intentions, or what were you looking for when you kind of made the choice to dive in and go back, aside from just being back in Florida and kind of your old stomping grounds again?
To be completely honest, the name. So I'm a huge camp guy. I've been a part of camp for like 15 years. So I went to summer camp every year as a kid. I volunteered in high school, did all that. And I've worked now entering my fifth year, give or take, carry the one. I'm in what some would call professional camping. I live and work at a summer camp, the same one I went to as a kid, actually. I'm in the Santa Cruz Mountains of California. So I'm a huge camp guy. I believe that everyone, young and old, everyone needs a kind of camp experience. And there's not, I mean, there are like vanity camps of like, you can go have the camp experience as an adult, but it's literally just, you know, doing the same thing kids do, which is great and that's fine. But the fact that he chose that name for some reason, like it just grabbed me immediately. And I said, I don't know what this is, but the word, and I told him at the thing, I stood up in front of everyone and said this, said, half the reason I'm here is because he put camp in the title,
in the name,
because I know what the word means to me and the potential that that word has. If you call something camp, the magic that can come out of it. And I said, all right, we got to see if, you know, this is true. And it absolutely was that. And just, no, huge fan of Jamie. We've gotten to spend a lot of time together when I've been back in Florida. He's just an awesome dude. Huge fan of him and everything that he's done. And I was just like, well, he's putting his name on something else. This has got to be good. This has got to be cool. And then, yeah, there were the more common elements of like, cool, it's another reason to be back in Florida and see my Florida crew. So that's kind of what drew me to that. And I was just, so that got announced a year ago. I was just in a weird, the very beginning, the cusp of a very weird transitionary period of my life that I hadn't quite, like I couldn't quite foresee, but looking back, that was kind of the catalyst to the last year that I've been on that has been quite a journey in and of itself. So that's kind of what drew me to Heart Camp.
Do you want to dive a little deeper there based on, I mean, if you've had a journey that, again, hindsight's 2020, and kind of seeing all the events that you had coming out of there and the roller coaster that you rode there, again, both being in the first Heart Camp in Florida, and then you photographed the session I was actually attending in Los Angeles. So having a couple exposures to the Heart Camp experience, kind of seeing what you got out of it, and based on coming into it with, even if it's just for just the camp name, was it something you found what you were looking for? And then, you know, what did you actually get out of it in the long run?
I didn't have much to go off of as to what to expect aside from camp is a good synonym for community. So I was hoping, you know, maybe I was going to, you know, meet some rad people that I would get to call my friends and which has certainly happened. I mean, we're, you know, a bunch of us are going to go to the reunion in January and that's going to be rad. So that box is checked. To me, outside of that, everything else was going to be a bonus. I just kind of went into it without, you know, much expectation, which I think was kind of the best attitude to take. And it led to pretty significant change for me. So a year ago, my life looked a lot different. I was in this job. I was still working, you know, photography full time, but it was like just kind of a cookie cutter industry job that like I wasn't super happy with. I mean, I was looking more to expand, you know, take my own business to the next level that I was doing on the side. And that job kind of precluded me from doing that. I had been offered a number of times another role back at camp, the role that I have now, basically the 4 years that I had left. So I was there from 2012 to 2014, and I left in 2014 to go to Florida. And then came back, didn't go back immediately to camp. Heart Camp connects to camp, basically, if you look at it that way. Mm-hmm. So stuck in this job, just a lot of life. I had some other life shenanigans going on that I was kind of mucking about. And so I showed up in Heart Camp, and one of the sessions is all about bringing your heart to work. And, you know, are you able to do that? If so, you know, how do you feel that benefits you? If not, you know, are there ways that you can, you know, bring your heart to work or find a way to find meaning in your day to day, you know, because the reality is not everyone, you know, gets to work, you know, their dream job or a job where bringing your heart to work is super cut and dry, you know, so there's a lot of exploration in that session of, you know, understanding that looks different for other people and how you can make that happen. And for me, that set off a lot of, you know, bells in my head of like, not really. School photography is kind of a drag. You know, I don't, you know, get to bring my heart to work. Mm-hmm. And but I got this other opportunity over here that's always just kind of been on the shelf that I didn't take super seriously because of my relationship with the person that was offering it to me. We'd always kind of had this jovial kind of joking thing about, oh, you should come back to camp. Ha ha. It's funny. I didn't realize that person was actually 100% serious with this job they were offering me. So that got the ball rolling in my head a lot about, you know, am I happy, you know, with where I'm at in life? Do I have, you know, opportunities that I'm just kind of shirking? Do I need to look closer at certain things, do some soul searching? So I got back from Florida. A couple weeks later, camp had a benefit auction, funny enough. So I went up to that and I, you know, sat down with the person and I said, you know, we had a conversation. I said, look, you know, are you serious? and we talked about it, and one thing led to another, and I gave them a verbal yes, you know, the end of that night, mm-hmm. And I started 6 weeks later, I moved up here. So I've been here since about March, and I've been loving it, and it's been great. It's kind of a job that I wished had existed the first time I was here, and it didn't really at the time, but now it does. I basically get to tell camp's story, just document everything that takes place here. They call that a marketing job in other industries, but for me, I like to consider myself a storyteller because this place means so much to me. I now get to tell the story of the campers that come here and the families that come here and the experiences they have, and just get to extol the virtues and just talk about this thing that means so much to me anyway, that I will happily sit down and bend your ear about just for fun. But now I get to do that for a living, and that's pretty rad. And I'm super grateful that is something I get to do now. And it might have happened without Heart Camp, might not, I don't know. But I know that how it played out, Heart Camp played a significant role in how my life has looked for the past almost year now.
In giving you the tools and the necessary frame of mind to make that decision, that was something you needed to do. Because I would argue that the difference between calling it a marketing job versus calling it a storyteller is that you're able to bring your heart to it. So like somebody right. doing like a 9-to-5 is going to be a marketing person. And then right. being able to do that where you're living it and bringing your heart to it is something where, yeah, now you're a more passionate storyteller in that role.
Yeah. And in that vein, I turned right around, and Jamie invited me back down to the Heart Camp session that he hosted in LA at the end of April, which you attended, which was cool that you got to see that from that side of things, because you came with Amanda to the one in January, but just kind of hung out, mm-hmm. In the periphery. And then you got to see, so you got both perspectives. You got, Amanda's report, and then you got to experience it for yourself. And the LA session was awesome. Again, I was doing it, I was strictly fly on the wall pretty much. So I got to just kind of watch it unfold, which was really cool because I experienced Heart Camp myself, and like walking through it is one thing, but like watching someone else kind of walk through those doors and meet and mingle, knowing kind of what they're going to leave with the next mm-hmm. day, but they don't know that. It was pretty rad to see that kind of everything unfolding as I kind of figured it would, in still its unique nature and being a different set of people, being a different venue. Just like we talk about up here, every summer at camp is different. Every Heart Camp, weekend or session or whatever is the same, yes, in theory, but it ends up playing out much differently. And I think that's part of the beauty of it, because you throw a different group of people in a room to talk about the same subject as the group before, you're going to get a different result.
Yeah, you're going to have,
that's part of the magic,
plenty of different conversations. And I'm sure it was interesting. I mean, especially for me, it was interesting to see kind of the result of those conversations, as far as when you guys were in session in Florida for the first one, as far as some of the follow on or carryover conversation and things that, after that. Whereas for you being in LA, the uniqueness of knowing, like what you said about them, of knowing the content they were going to cover, but not necessarily obviously who was going to share what type thing. But then being in that space and kind of waiting for it to click for somebody, or to see them have that realization, or know that this is the part of my story I've never shared with anybody, but this is a safe space and I want to share this, or, this is why I'm here and I never told anybody why I'm here, but I want to share it because they share it, somebody else in the room shared and stuff like that. So I'm sure that was definitely an interesting experience, and mm-hmm. the ability to capture that with some pretty amazing photography too, gives it another angle that you are able to do more of your amazing storytelling as well.
Thanks, Rick.
One of the other things that we'll talk about here, we'll circle back on some of the other stuff, but I mean, we mentioned some of the photography there, but then also, I mean, just some of the stuff for the self-care that, I mean, since we've gotten connected, that, seen you doing, which is in some of the other conversation that we had, a couple of conversation pieces or kind of topics that we both looked at over the course of the year, but you've picked back up or, dive back deep into weightlifting and some of the stuff you were doing with a local weightlifting gym, and some, you've made some great progress there. And then also we had talked a little bit off and on about imposter syndrome. And so there's just kind of diving into a couple of those, since those are two topics that for kind of another buzzword term, the toxic masculinity, or just, you know, masculinity in general. But those are things that generally end up being something that in this space, I think we need to talk about more, because it does end up helping to have that conversation, you know, going back to all the way back to, you know, the start of your To Write Love journey that you were mentioning, where you have things that are able to be conversation starters. So you're able to then use, you know, weightlifting for body image and self-esteem and a lot of stuff there. And then as well as the other angle of it being the imposter syndrome and being able to have that, how that puts you in a space for what quote unquote a man is supposed to be today versus other stuff. And just being in this space, it is being outnumbered from the, you know, male to female type perspective. Those are things that we don't get to talk about that often. Kind of jumping into it first, like, was weightlifting something you had done before getting back into it? What do you get out of it? And then, like, does that help you get into a better mental headspace? Not necessarily, you know, just getting fit physically, but then also getting the endorphins going and helping you process things mentally so that you are able to deal with your own mental health better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had, you know, like a lot of people, I've had, you know, the 24-hour fitness membership, and, you know, you use the treadmill and, you know, a couple machines and then you go home. But I'd never lifted weights. I wasn't, you know, into, you know, go to the gym, working out, getting gains. Mm-hmm. I was a distance athlete for 3 years. Okay. So I ran long distance for about 3 years, a couple life things, and then just kind of fell out of it. Found myself wanting to be more active again, but maybe in a different direction. And my sister had actually started working out at the same gym about this time last year. And she loved it. And what stood out for her was the community that this place had formed, and just the non-judgmental nature and just the welcome environment that it has created, which is a really funny thing for a gym that creates world-class record-breaking athletes to have, mm-hmm. but that's exactly what it is. So I go to a gym in Santa Cruz called Santa Cruz Strength, and it's formerly owned by one of the strongest guys with the strongest hands in the world. Literally, he can roll a frying pan up. And so I walk in March for, you know, a couple of intro sessions with this dude named Clay, who is like 14 feet tall and could probably pick me up and just throw me through the wall. But he's also one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He, you know, I showed up, he shook my hand, and within 10 seconds of talking to him, I could tell that he couldn't care less how much I could lift or how flexible I was or how strong I was. I could tell that none of that mattered to him. I could tell that he just wanted to be there for me and kind of what I wanted to get out of the experience, which was a vehicle to spend more time with my sister. We work out every day, which nice. Is rad. And then just to explore this kind of new way to use my body that I'd never done before. Like I did, you know, when I took up rock climbing and then, you know, running, it was like, it's something that pushed back at my negative self-image that I've always kind of had. Cause I've always kind of been, you know, the kind of the bigger guy, and never very athletic or fit. And that's always kind of, you know, messed with me in just kind of a self-image kind of way. And it's never been necessarily about, I gave up a long time ago on looking a certain way. But for me, it's then turned into, how can I make my body physically feel useful, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, if I can go and run 10 miles, like I may not, you know, look like, you know, Adonis, but to me, I can still do something with my body that I feel proud of. So that was running, and now with weightlifting, it's, you know, I'm seeing the improvements and, you know, week by week and everything. And it's like, you know, I'm never necessarily going to be, you know, some ripped yoked dude. And I don't know that I would want that, but when I walk out of the gym every day, everyone makes it a point to say goodbye to each other. And everyone makes it a point to say, you know, good job to each other when you leave. And I walk out of that place, you know, feeling just capable and thereby, you know, more confident with this body that I spent so much time hating. You know, so I found it through that to be just kind of this vehicle for, you know, my self-confidence, if anything. And the gym environment itself has really helped that. And it's funny that you bring up the subject of masculinity and all of that, because this gym actually, it's predominantly women, which I think creates this really awesome, different culture, very different culture. I mean, yes, there are world-class athletes, you know, both men and women that train in this gym, but there's not that attitude. because I've gone in, you know, when, you know, the really impressive Olympic lifters are lifting, or, you know, when the big squatting guys are out there moving weight, and, you know, me, I'm still very much a beginner, and, you know, that's very obvious to anyone, you know, who's experienced, but they don't care. And that's immediately apparent when I walk in that place. It's like, nobody in here cares what I'm doing, as long as I'm being safe, obviously, mm-hmm. and, you know, having a good time. That's all anyone in that gym cares about. And, you know, we're all super supportive, and we always, you know, cheer each other on, and, you know, the joker in the gym is, you know, no, we don't care how much weight is on that bar. And that's very much the truth. You know, people just want you to be moving and smiling and having a good time. And it's really the community, again, which is now a theme in my life, now that I'm thinking about it, is why I keep going. You know, we have a faithful crew that goes in at 6 a.m. every morning when it opens, and it's the same folks in there. And, you know, we're all kind of on the same track. And it's just really good. It's the community. You know, it's, you need that supportive environment, and being in there shows me, you know, that, hey, maybe, you know, I may never, you know, be super slim or whatever, you know, body image I would have liked to have had, but I can be confident for once in what my body is capable of. And I think that's huge. And I've seen a number of people in that gym go through that kind of same journey, I think, as well. So yeah,
I think we're on very similar tracks there, where I played sports my entire life, pretty much every type of organized sport you can play aside from basketball. So I'm still pretty athletic, still pretty flexible, you know, did a half marathon training this summer. I just have a lot of extra padding on me. So it's pretty much the same way. So it ends up being something where being able to just be physical and be active, but know I don't have a certain look that I'll ever get to, or that I'll ever have the, you know, the body, or, you know, be jacked or ripped or something like that, and understand that, but then still know going into it that I'm going through the exercises, I have the ability to do what I need to make my body physically fit, which then in turn helps me be mentally fit and kind of keep going that way. So it's nice to hear the community there and the aspect of pushing each other to be just, you know, a more holistic whole in the gym, as opposed to more of the typical, when we think of it, as far as just kind of chasing something out of 24-hour fitness or LA fitness or something like that. So that's good there. The second part of my massive earlier question, touching on the imposter syndrome stuff that we had talked about a little bit more. And this is something where, like, I, you know, related to you, that I've suffered from or deal with on concurrently and still consistently pretty well. But it's something where, as you mentioned, the transition you had over the last year and using HeartCamp as a catalyst to make that jump, and the community and kind of conversations that you had there, and then seeing, just having it kind of put yourself in that light to be able to make the jump to the, you know, the photography position that you're doing now, and then as well as the camp position. What is there anything else there that you saw, or kind of hindsight being 2020, that you just weren't giving yourself enough credit for prior to HeartCamp, or that you were kind of playing it safe in a role that you knew you could do, and then some of the conversation and more, again, sharing your story and connecting with other people, then just kind of made that snowball into something where you were like, no, you know what, I can do this, and I can make that jump.
Yeah, no. So I've been coming up on like my ninth year of being, you know, a photographer professionally. I've always struggled with imposter, you know, syndrome, not feeling like, you know, I'm worthy, I'm deserving, or that I'm good enough. Or especially once I got to the point where, you know, I felt accomplished and like I could actually call myself, you know, a professional and all that stuff. And I think part of that has always had to do with whatever my main job was for some reason. So like for a long time I was part-time student, and then I was working at a pizza place and then doing photography on the side. Right. So it's hard to feel like you're a photographer when you spend half the time at college where you don't want to be, and then the other time slinging pizza, which you don't really want to do, and that kind of stuff. And I think that was part of it. And then once I jumped back into school photography, it started to get better because that was something, you know, I was doing 9 to 5, but it still always just kind of nagged at me that no matter, you know, how I progress up the ladder or how more accomplished I feel, or, you know, however my career changes, I feel like I don't deserve it a lot of the time. Or, you know, I see someone and go, oh, well, they're, you know, they're better than me, why am I even trying? Mm-hmm. Or I definitely quantify, I think, my worth, and I think a lot of people do this based on, like, social media stuff. You know, like, oh, man, my picture only got 18 likes. I'm garbage, you know, even though I shot 19 weddings this year and all this other stuff. You know, it's like almost every single weekend I'm out, you know, at a gig, a wedding, a family shoot, this or that, the other thing. But I still come back to my old tropes of it's not feeling like I'm good enough, or that I deserve to be here, or that I have a right to call myself a photographer for no clear reason, no real evidence, you know, why that is, other than I've always kind of struggled with things like self-confidence. And I think that ties a lot into, you know, kind of my mental health journey, is kind of walking through the lies that your brain tells you over and over. It just becomes hardwired up here. And, you know, that, I think that's part of, you know, our journey through our mental health recovery is also undoing, you know, those learned behaviors and those self-doubts and those lessons that our brain has ingrained into us that we're not good enough and we don't deserve this and we can't do this and, you know, you're a liar and, you know, all that stuff.
And you hit on it a little bit there with the social media aspect of things, but I think it's just the internet age where now we have instant access to so much information that, again, if, like you said, you were splitting time between a bunch of things. So it wasn't that you were doing one thing and, you know, you're 9 to 5 and you're a millionaire because of it. So that's how you deem success. So it ends up being a case where we end up defining our own success compared to so many other people that are known to be that thing. Like when you think of a field and you have a person's name attached to it, then it ends up being, you know, I'm never going to be that person, like what you said, so why even try? As opposed to some of the revelation to me through a lot of the folks in Hard Camp, but a lot of them are doing, you know, part-time everything. And there's a handful of people that, you know, we've had on the podcast here that are photographers in nature as well, musicians. I was super surprised at how many of the people had Etsy stores that have some amazing graphic design skills and are selling stuff there.
Right.
And then even starting up new businesses. And for me, the fact where I've been in one career since I graduated college 13 years ago, and then never really thought to expand out or do stuff part-time or anything like that. Whereas I had skill sets when I previously lived in North Carolina and having a very deep interest in woodworking. And I basically had a wood shop in my garage, but just never really thought about turning that into a profession. Whereas these people are like, yeah, I like doing this, so I'm going to, you know, make money on it. And so for me, it was something, again, similar to the conversation that, or what you were just saying, where it ends up being a case where I never think I'm going to be good enough, or I'm never going to be able to do that, which goes back to the perfectionist kind of conversation to start with. But, you know, why jump in? So one of the things I shared with you shortly after Hard Camp at some point was one of the things that, even in addition to talking about it in therapy all the time myself, I constantly go back to a quote or a story that Kevin Smith tells that his sister told him growing up when he wanted to be a movie maker and a filmmaker before he started making Clerks. So the kind of story is, he tells it was, he was talking to his sister and he was saying he wanted to make a film. He had written a script, but he was waiting and just wanting to do something. And so he wanted to be a movie maker. That's what he wanted to do when he grew up. He just didn't know how to get there. And so his sister's response was, just make the movie and you'll be a movie maker. Like there's nobody that is practically gatekeeping you from doing it. Like if you want to do this, if you want to make this film, make it, and then you're a movie maker, you're a filmmaker. Like that's nobody stopping you. Like if you're out shooting and you're, like you said, you're shooting 19 weddings in a season, you're a photographer. That's obviously a level of success there. I mean, and we can all define levels of success and what we get out of it and what it means to us. But if we end up breaking it down and looking at why we aren't doing things and kind of where those lies are kind of culminating from in our brain, that it ends up being a different conversation as opposed to the just, you know, never venturing down that path because we're never going to have a million likes and 145,000 Instagram followers or something like that.
Right. And it's interesting because I would never look at somebody who's like working at Home Depot, you know, 9 to 5, and also writing a book in the middle of the night, every night. And I'd never look at them and go, you're not a writer. You work at Home Depot. I will look at that person and go, wow, I'm actually kind of inspired by their level of commitment. You know, they're stuck in this job that they probably hate, but they're not letting it destroy whatever dream they have. But why do we look at ourselves not in that same
and why not can't give we us the same credit.
Exactly. It comes from up here.
Yeah. And so again, that goes with having the conversations and talking through it and just, you know, beating that out of your brain to then say again, because when you have a friend who has the same project and it's not their day job, but it's their passion project and that's what they want to run with, you'll support them to the ends of the earth. But then again, we don't give ourselves the same kindness to be able to do that internally and figure that out as well. So it's interesting again, just how talking with other people ends up helping ourselves even more so. And a lot of the, you end up realizing you're not giving yourself that same grace when you're starting to talk to other people and telling them what to do. So those conversations go a long way there. We can pivot to some of the other stuff here. You are familiar with the Enneagram, correct?
Yeah, I think so. We take a number of different tests. When you show up for your internship in Florida, you get this wonderful binder full of all kinds of things that I still have somewhere. One of those things being the Myers-Briggs and then another one being the Enneagram. Nice. And we took it. I can't remember what I got, but I looked it up this morning and I'm almost confident I'm a pacifist.
Okay.
I hate confrontation. I just want everything to be cool. I want everybody to be okay. Everybody to be calm. We'll figure this out. I don't want anybody to be mad at me or anyone else. That kind of, I think I resonated with that one the most.
Yeah, I think based on the book that I have, which was I have a bunch of them in digital form, but the one I have readily available offhand is one that I found at a used bookstore for $2. So I couldn't pass that one up. Originally copyrighted in 2000. So it's quite into the Enneagram journey, but it's also quite old compared to the time we're recording this. Right. But that one, I believe that has the type labeled as the mediator, which is a type 9.
Type 9.
So that seems something where based on the camp counselor mentality as well, I'm sure there's a reason why all of that comes together and that those are aligned there. So that's not surprising because in a lot of the conversations we have centered around the Enneagram, there are many people who have kind of taken the test, understand that and know where there's obviously a crossover between the Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram pieces there, but they have an understanding and that additional insight that it gives you into your personality where everything that we've just talked about for the past 45 minutes now, like it's summed up into a number, but it's like, you know why you act that way. You know why you act in certain situations, you know, kind of what forces you into other situations and then why you tend to interact with people in a certain way. So those are some pretty interesting tools that are there and it ends up being something that's so simple, but also pretty powerful.
That's definitely what I got the most out of during my journey with therapy was just learning how all the dots connect. And then that is then translated into these cognitive practices that I walked away with of like understanding how all the dots kind of connect and why this happened. And this is why I react to this situation and how all that connects. And then how can you manage that? Mm-hmm. That's probably, yeah, those connections is definitely the most helpful thing I got out of therapy definitely was just kind of understanding how all the pieces in the puzzle kind of fit together and then how you can manage those.
Yeah, it ends up being, especially for somebody looking to get started or looking to understand, and again, your Enneagram number can kind of change or it can be one, and then as you do more, like you can understand that you maybe are a different number, but it ends up almost being a Rosetta Stone to kind of jump into that journey and start having the conversation and then having like all those paths start to align.
Right.
And seeing some of your notes here on self-care, kind of if you're playing the Batman Arkham games, it's almost like detective mode for your brain to be able to then figure out that you're seeing, you know, around the corner and all the things you have to jump and where you can throw your batarangs and stuff like that. So it ends up being that, you know, the clarity to jump in and start the conversation as opposed to, again, just letting those negative self-talk, those lies that our brain are telling us just to kind of sit there and fester. But it gives us the ability to jump in and kind of start the conversation somewhere.
Right.
So, I mean, we can pivot to self-care then. I mean, we've covered exercise, we've covered some of your photography, but you also mentioned the usage of, or just the love of music and video games for some of your self-care there. So what else do you love or kind of what do you use or what's your go-to for when you're feeling like you need to just, you know, zone out and get back to yourself?
Yeah, again, yeah, the music's a big one. Video games, photography, all those are all things that, you know, I initially learned how to lean on very early on, you know, like, you know, back in middle school, high school, when kind of my larger mental health kind of journey first started. Those are definitely the first things I gravitated towards. I love listening to music. I play guitar. I played guitar for like ever now. I was in a band in high school. That was huge for me. When I play guitar, I'm able to switch gears in my brain, and it's very similar to how I know I am when I'm out shooting, when I have a camera in my hand. It's not disassociative, but it's almost like I become a streamlined, more efficient version of myself, mm-hmm. where like somehow for some reason my brain is able to recognize like, okay, this thing that we're doing right now is what we were kind of purpose built for. So we need to shut off all that extraneous nonsense that tells us we're not good enough or all this other just shenanigans. So we can focus on this one thing. And it's a combination of just calming and just affirming. It's peaceful. And it's validation. Again, it comes back to that confidence thing of like I'm not able to really consciously say why, but something tells me that this is a reason I should be confident and proud of myself. So that's kind of why, you know, music and photography have always been big things for me. And video games are just fun. They're a good, you know, escape like you talked about. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody connect an Enneagram number to a video game. You should get points for that. That's pretty solid. Other self-care, you know, photography. I live in a beautiful part of the state. I can, you know, drive out half an hour. I'm out on the coast. I spend a lot of time out on the coast. I love sunrises. Those are my thing. My buddy Chris would say that anybody can see a sunset, but you have to want that sunrise.
Yeah.
And I love getting up early, you know, way before the crack of dawn and just driving out to somewhere with a good view. I love watching the world change, and I love watching kind of the day come alive. It kind of creeps at first. Everything kind of takes on, you know, kind of a blue tone, and it's real cool. And like you can start to see the sun's not out yet, but it's kind of bouncing around in the atmosphere, and you know, you can start to see shapes and some colors, and then you know, it slowly, gradually increases. And then out of nowhere, the sun shows up and the day is there. And those are some of the most beautiful moments I've ever captured or experienced, you know, were those sunrises. This past New Year's, I actually went and stayed in Sequoia National Park.
Oh, wow.
And I hiked out to a spot and watched the last sunset of 2017. And then I got up real early a couple hours later, hiked to the top of a rock and watched the first sunrise of 2018. And those are still the best sunset and sunrises I've seen all year. So I make the joke that I'm a chaser of sunrises.
That's pretty awesome.
For that reason. Same thing with stars. You know, I love astrophotography because it requires an incredible amount of patience and luck. And again, it's just incredibly calming. I'm out there with the world. You know, I've gone out in the middle of nowhere in Yosemite, knowing that I'm, you know, the only one out for miles around. It's just me and these stars at, you know, 6,000 feet. And that's incredibly humbling, but also more of a sense of peace than I've ever been able to find, you know, day to day. So it's just looking for those moments where I'm able to just kind of stop and slow down.
I mean, similar to what you said about sunsets, where anybody can watch those, but you need to want to watch a sunrise. And the way you phrase that, I love that, as far as you love watching the world change. And so I am familiar with the West Coast sunsets and kind of the green flash down in San Diego and some of those things. But those are a blink and you'll miss it type thing, as opposed to the beautiful like chrysalis, as you just described, the dawn and the sunrise and how that goes through and changes rather slowly, and something that ends up being more immersive than you can imagine. And it takes a little bit more time, or takes a lot more time than just the sunset of blink and you'll miss it. So those are definitely understandable reasons to have that kind of chasing of the sunrises. And then also you mentioned the being comfortable in the comfort that the stars bring you, and you mentioned kind of the patience and the luck. But I think that also goes back to our imposter syndrome conversation, where if you end up like, again, it's, I would also add in there a little bit of diligence, but if you have the patience to kind of do it and stick with it, you will need some luck at some point. But then still sticking with it and having the patience and giving yourself the time, you are able to capture that. So it ends up being something where, whether you're chasing stars and you need to, you know, wait to, you know, literally chase the star, or you're chasing the figurative star and it's a project you never thought you'd get to, or it's, you know, the shoot you never thought you'd have, just giving yourself that little bit of patience and a little bit of luck goes a long way there.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. That makes a lot of sense.
We talked a ton about community so far. So, I mean, is there anything else throughout all of your community-driven work and kind of almost what you are, you know, doing on a daily basis with all of your work, whereas seeing the photography that you share online that brings people together and you're, you know, a fly on the wall and kind of being that community facilitator, which is almost, again, camp counselor in a kind of communication medium, and then being the storyteller at work and the community at gym. Is there anything else that, as far as, you know, what, how do you define community? What does it mean to you? And what do you generally like to interact with in community?
The intern director at the time, Lauren, would say that a community is a group of people coming together for the same purpose. And I think that purpose can be anything you want it to be. And for me, it's always about connection, meaning figuring out, you know, places that I belong and where I'm welcome, but also providing that for other folks. So this is my the end of my fourth summer on staff here at camp. And I've always kind of played a counselor role to the staff. So I've always enjoyed meeting the staff, hanging out with them. And we also hire 2 to 3 dozen staff from the UK every year. So they come over for like an exchange thing. And I love getting to share my home state with them and provide these experiences for them and just kind of provide for their time in this strange new place that they've never been. And just kind of plan these trips and outings where people can just kind of be together. Our last weekend of the summer before everyone kind of went off in their own separate ways, I organized a sunset trip as I had done all summer, but this one I managed to get almost everyone on staff together for this trip. And it was just this picture perfect moment of just kind of everyone clambering up onto the cliffs and just, you know, there for again, the same thing and finding, you know, this magic that we don't know what it looks like or, you know, that hilarious story or that the golden selfie or whatever it is for people I want to provide, you know, that experience for folks. And I've actually been really surprised at the community that I've found in my 9 years of being a photographer. I get a decent amount of my business through Facebook, obviously, which is also then partially through word of mouth and just referrals. And like my very first wedding I ever shot a million years ago referred me to somebody, you know, several years down the line. And then at that wedding, I got to reconnect with the couple whose wedding I shot for the first, you know, my first ever wedding. And it's just, it's stuff like that of like, you know, I see people at weddings and stuff, or just like I get referred to this person and then I get to meet their family. And I've really tried to make that an impetus in my work of not just showing up and taking the pictures, but whether I know the people before the shoot or not, by the time I leave their wedding day or their home for their family portraits or whatever it is, I want to feel like I've connected with them to some degree. And I want to learn about them and just be, you know, another part of their story, not just some vendor or some, you know, craftsman that they worked with, you know, not like a mechanic. And I say this, you know, it's how I describe kind of my approach to photography as a whole is I worry a lot that people go to a photographer and they get an experience more akin to going to a mechanic.
It's a transactional experience as opposed to like an artisanal experience.
Exactly. So more so than, and ways to use my skills and talents or more so than, you know, getting the perfect shot, I'm always looking for ways to connect. And that might be rolling around with a 5-year-old on the grass during a family session or, you know, going out with my cameras akimbo and doing the cha-cha slide at a wedding and just, you know, making myself organically more a part of something I have found will yield more natural photographs and more, just a more abundance of just those awesome moments. Because if I connect with these people and give them a reason to be comfortable with me and for them to trust me on that basic human level, you know, of just the subconscious going, hey, I can trust this guy. They're going to let me in, even if it's subconsciously, they're going to let me in more into their world, into their story and into their emotions. And that's where the great photographs come from, in my opinion. So it's looking, again, it's bringing my heart to work and then looking for those connection moments, you know, whatever I can, as you know, kind of how I've furthered my work and how I think I've taken it to kind of the level that it's at now, more so than my technical prowess or anything else. And I told Marielle this actually, who we met at Heart Camp LA, I did her family portraits over Thanksgiving, and I told her that, and I said, more so than any esteem or technical prowess or bottom line number or anything else, you finding meaning in this work is going to mean more to me than any of that stuff. And I think that's really what's driven the personal personal edge that my work has, I think. That's what I pride myself on.
And then, I mean, circling back, that ends up being more valuable, again, to you than any number of likes or anything like that. When you have that connection and you're present in that community, when you are able to make those connections by word of mouth and people are coming to you because of the authenticity you put in the work and the attention to detail and all of that stuff. There's, you know, a million different technical things that you can do and just kind of sink time and money into other stuff. But being present and being focused on your work and having that authenticity in your work goes a long way and is what is keeping that connection by word of mouth. So that's a pretty awesome thing. And so I've definitely followed and enjoyed and seen the heart that you're putting into the photography for what's get shared on Facebook. So happy to see that and keep up the great work there.
Thanks, Rick.
So we'll start to wrap up here. And then for two questions, this is the first one we've done where you've actually, the person has had a heads up for the final question, so we won't have to consternate too much on that one. But the one that wraps up, puts a tie or puts a bow on everything, what is one thing that you'd want from someone to take away from the entirety of your story, the entirety of your journey?
We touched on kind of the second half of my story, and that's fine. So something that became a joke, started as a joke in the intern house, actually, which then became a very serious part of our kind of community and something that we all leaned on and became an integral part of kind of our just dynamic, is the phrase, "You deserve it." And that started as just jokes. I think somebody was thinking about like ordering pizza delivery for like the third time. Uh-huh. Something incredibly frivolous and simple, and just like I'm having guilt about this incredibly asinine thing that I want to do for myself simply because I want to do something for myself. And someone from some other part in the house just chimed in, "You deserve it." And it became this thing. It's like, yeah, it started out as a joke, but then it rolled into like this kind of thing of "You deserve it," which then also morphed into a second part, which is "I appreciate you," which is something that I still say to this day. And I make it a point just to say to folks those two things, you know, "You deserve it," and "I appreciate you," because that's true. We're all in this together. And I know that, you know, it's a cliche to get thrown around, but "You deserve it," and "I appreciate you," and "You deserve to be appreciated."
One of the key metaphors is that kind of sayings here is that, and the stories so far that we've shared have shown, is that we are in this together. And a lot of the help that people have sought in their journey has been because they've had help from other people. And so that it's not something where, even though most of the crap that we're fighting and we're dealing with is all in our head and we tend to be fighting ourselves on it, we are able to use and rely on other people to help us with that. So the kind of the positive reinforcement and the mental strengthening that those two sentiments have and kind of contribute to is awesome. So that's a unique answer to that question so far, but it's one that I definitely like. The final song that we'll close out, and it kind of goes back to some of your self-care and your fondness for music, but what is one song that you'd want to share about your story that is reminiscent of your story, that is just something that, a favorite self-care song, one that you love, or just favorite song in general type thing?
It's a song called "Song for the Broken" by Close Your Eyes. I think it falls under the realm of metalcore, so it's heavier music, it's got people screaming. We always refer to that genre that band kind of occupied as hopecore, because it goes against, it's one of my favorite songs to send with people who don't normally listen to that genre of music, because it pushes back against a lot of the stereotypes that surround heavy music. I mean, when you read the lyric, and like literally it's in the title of the song, but when you read the lyrics, it's a very uplifting, very hopeful song about lifting people up, and so many people are down and broken and tired, and this is me saying, you know, this is enough. And I've always resonated with that genre of music, even, you know, today, as I'm supposed to, you know, be an adult and all this stuff. I still love heavy music. I still love thrashing around mosh pits, and I've just found a huge amount of catharsis and connection, both in listening to heavy music and just the relation that comes with, you know, listening to that type of aggressive emotional music. where you can resonate with the lyrics, but also the community that exists around heavy music and you know, going to metal shows, and from the outsider looking in, it's, you know, just people running around smashing into each other. But if you look close at those mosh pits and you see somebody fall down, what you see next is incredible. And that's about a dozen people bending down to pick that person up. And that kind of, and it's that kind of community is, yeah, we're all coming together to listen to this music, to smash into each other, to let off some steam, to just let some emotions ride, just to, you know, throw it out in the air. And then at the end of the, you know, at the end of the shows when the music fading out, you know, it's all hugs and handshakes and, you know, complete strangers, you know, everybody's, you know, just sweaty, voices gone, just, you know, hugging it out at the end of the show, you know, like we all lived through this. We all, you know, we all let out different emotions and kind of dealt with our own thing, but we all did it together in this room. It's kind of a giant form of group therapy, yep, if you want to look at it that way. It's probably definitely one of my all-time favorite songs, and it's one of my favorite to send to share with people. Just and the message is, you know, it kind of explains itself really. It's a solid listen, even if you don't listen to that genre of music. I'd recommend it, or at least listen, look up the lyrics first. We can compromise. It's fine.
Well, we'll be adding that one to our season long playlist there. So folks will get some exposure to it, whether they know it or not. And then, so if it's one where they're not sure what it is, they can come back and look up the lyrics, but hopefully I haven't heard of it before, but I'm definitely going to check it out as soon as we wrap up here to see that. But I agree. There's no better form of group therapy or emotional kind of connection than live shows. I'm a hard rock metal fan, and to kind of be at shows, and I don't do as much in the mosh pit. I'm usually on the fringe, but I'm usually the people kind of supporting it and kind of, again, going back to my Enneagram type of being a two and just looking for the people who are deathly afraid of the mosh pit and wanting to protect them from it and make sure that, you know, there's for the people that want to be in it versus the people that not, and kind of separating that boundary. But it is something through the number of shows that I've been at, and even having been first on the rail at a Metallica show less than a month ago, and kind of seeing that and just seeing, again, the community, the energy, the release, and all of that stuff that comes with that. And I've always been more of the fan of the more ballad-like metal songs. So I love the screaming, love the heavy music and the guitars, drums, and everything. But as long as it's telling a story in its lyrics, I'm hooked. So that about wraps it up for us. Was there anything you wanted to touch on before we close it out, or did we hit on everything you wanted to for at least this go around?
Yeah, definitely. Maybe a part two, we can go over more of, you know, my story if you feel that would resonate with folks. But no, I think we definitely crammed a lot into, it was a little over an hour, so thanks for letting me be a part of this. And I've always wanted to be on a podcast, so
thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google, and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.